Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Welcome to the Friday evening edition of The Money Show, proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, winner of the 2019 EMEA Finance African Banking Awards for Best Investment Bank. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Brutalbiz quiz later. It's got a twist of the World Cup attached to it. So if you think you know your World Cup and you can have put a money spin on it, by all means, come and play the Brutal Biz quiz this evening. It'll be fun. We'll bring you some of the best bits from the Money Show that has been. Lots of news stories out today in terms of corporate activity. We'll talk to Tato Mashiko at Sanlam Private Wealth. But first, a load shedding threat for the weekend. Eskom playing down the risk of load shedding, but saying it is imminently possible as a result of a fragile network. And there was load shedding last night between 10 and 5 a.m. Eskom sought to take its customary band-aid to the national grid. This morning, from a little after what used to be the investment cars in Bryanston, it's now something else. But at least there, from there to the highway and beyond, City Power had an equipment breakdown. And they had blamed the breakdown on load shedding. So traffic was a mess, and it seems like it's persisted throughout much of today as well. So quite frustrating. Well, today, though, is an important day. And unless I've missed the announcement of the appointment of the new Eskom chief executive, and I don't think I have, this is what the Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan told us, what, 10 days ago? Minister, I need a date from you. No, soon. No, quite soon. Not now, not just now. Lots of people on my SMS line, on the my Twitter feed saying, give us a date for the appointment of the chief executive, please.
It'll be during, I think we had an announcement, I'm not sure, but it's within the next 10 days.
Within the next 10 days, so by Friday next week.
Yeah.
Pravin Gordhan. Yeah. Thank you. Pravin Gordhan. Yeah, yeah. Pravin Gordhan, the Public Enterprises Minister, by Friday next week. Some poor sop has put up their hand and accepted the job of Eskom chief executive. Now, did he mean Friday next week or did he mean today? I interpreted that as today. Chris Yelland, managing director of EE Publishers. The deadline was today. We don't yet have an Eskom chief executive. Or did I miss the big announcement, Chris?
Bruce, the deadline was at the end of October. Mr. Jabu Mabuza said he was out of there at the end of October. It's now well past that, another second deadline that you've extracted from the minister seems to have been broken, unless there's an announcement tonight, I suppose.
Well, it seems unlikely. It really does. I mean, here's the situation. I mean, we need to find somebody who's prepared to take on the enormous task of turning around Eskom with a shareholder, which is government, which is determined to keep calling the shots in terms of the national grid. Is it a case of nobody wanting to put up their hands, or what do you think is going on in the background?
Now, we know that there have been people that have put up their hands. Three candidates were presented by the board to the minister. We know that there has been discussions amongst, between the minister's office and these candidates. So, yes, there are candidates that are there. I think we've got to ask, why is government always experiencing delayed decision-making? It's not just in the appointment of an Eskom CEO. We saw delays in the IRP for many, many years. We've seen delays in the roadmap. We were supposed to have clarity on Eskom's debt in the speech by the finance minister last week. The CEO is another issue. But this delayed decision-making, is really damaging confidence and certainty in a sector that badly needs just that.
And Eskom is back in crisis mode. I mean, switching off the grid last night between 10 and 5 in the morning to refuel in terms of water and other supplies, because the grid is running on hope and prayer at the moment. And then the admission just a couple of minutes ago that the grid is on tenterhooks.
Yeah, we are operating, Eskom is operating, the grid is operating very, very close to the edge for extended periods. So it just takes, one or two unplanned breakdowns to push us over the edge. And that's exactly what is happening. When you are operating your emergency reserves for extended periods, as we are, open cycle gas turbines running on very expensive diesel, and the pumped water storage schemes – are meant for emergency use, but they've been running for extended periods, and that's why they keep on running out of diesel and also running out of water resources in the top dams of these pump storage schemes. It's just a signal about how close we are to the edge. Unfortunately, the lack of transparency from Eskom about how close we are to the edge at any time is deeply disturbing, because people in the economy can't plan for this and make arrangements. And I've been banging away at Eskom about this lack of transparency, asking for information, never getting it. It's really very disturbing, the way they operate.
Yeah, and then we've got Parliament Gordon getting really irritated with Busisiwe Mavuso at Business Leadership South Africa, who happens also to be on the Eskom board, and she was in Parliament, what was it, 2 weeks ago now, saying to Parliament, under huge pressure, because Parliament's now pointing the finger at the Eskom board, and the Eskom board is feeling that it's being, to use the term, emasculated, if you like, in terms of government's interference within the boardroom at Eskom. And Busisiwe Mavuso once again confirming on The Money Show this week that, yes, we do need months and months and months of load shedding if we are going to do a proper fix on the grid. Yet it's just too politically unpalatable to do.
Yeah, I really admire an independent non-executive board director who does her job properly. In other words, gives solid information, as she is paid to do as an independent director. She's there to give this independent input without the constraints that an employee would have in such an organization. And it's disturbing to see, you know, the criticism that she has come under for doing her job properly as an independent non-executive director.
How long can we keep sticking this grid together with Prit and Prestick?
Well, I think with the new IRP that's coming up, people tend to think, you know, that this is the solution, that now we got an IRP, the problems go away. Of course, that's not the case, because the solutions take time to implement. And all the big solutions, I'm talking about utility-scale renewable energy, which will take several years to bring to the table, Medupi and Kusile, who are, you know, very behind schedule. New gas to power is at least a 5-year longer process. So the immediate solutions, there is a need, and government has expressed this, to go out for a request for information, which is actually kicking the can down the road. They should be going out for a request for proposals, not request for information. If we haven't got the information at our fingertips at this late stage, there's something wrong. But they should be going out with requests for proposals with a view to placing orders, contracts for solutions that can be delivered quickly in the next year. And anything that we do that does not do just that is just delaying the inevitable.
Chris Yellen, thank you. Very generous man with his time and his expertise, sharing that with us this evening on The Money Show. The Managing Director at EE Publishers, Chris Yellen.
Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Got a bit of time, so I just want to have a little rant, if I may, on something completely unrelated. I got a bee in my bonnet this morning because somebody sent me a voice note. And so when somebody sends you a voice note, it is possibly the laziest thing they can do. And it's often people, when they send voice notes, are not particularly focused. And they are a very, very frustrating mechanism of communication. And the message I got was like, hi, I was wondering, yeah, listen, I hope you're well. Sorry about the voice note. Could you please do me a favor? And it's Damien. Sorry that I'm doing this, but it's just, I need to ask you a question. Do you think you could let me know? And then it's, stop it, Johnny. What you doing? Stop. No, man, my son's getting undressed in the shops. It's that sort of thing that drives me mad. And if somebody sat down, and I'm beginning to sound old, I accept this, and sent you an SMS or a WhatsApp or an email, they would, whatever message was, I still don't know because I haven't bothered phoning this person back, they would still be able to deliver you the message, and they would do it in 10 words or less because it's their time that they're taking up. So anyway, go to Twitter, and I know what's going to happen when I put this on Twitter, and I relayed roughly that voice note on social media on today, And the inevitable happened, because within about 7 minutes of me posting that tweet, this happened.
Bruce, it's Leighton, and man, I was just wondering. Never mind.
You're joking, of course. He's winding me up. That's Leighton Beard from the AA. He's in trouble with me for winding me up. And then he sent me another one just for bad measure, and a couple of other people as well. Does this sort of thing grate you? It is a tool. You have people who are running businesses using this tool, and they are wasting your time and my time and getting up my nose. Are they getting up yours? 31702-31567.
The Money Show. The Markets.
And Tato Mashego is with Sanlam Private Wealth and in studio with us this evening. Tato, just looking at markets, a big sell-off on the JSE, but I think all global markets, just looking at the charts now, were in negative territory practically all day.
Well, good evening, Bruce. Yes, it was quite a bit of a negative day today. Obviously, the potential phase one, as it's been called, trade talks between US and China had an up and down, beginning earlier on with the Chinese Commerce Ministry saying that the deal seemed to be on, and then later news from the US president that no, actually, we haven't agreed anything. You'd think that markets have come to be used to this sort of volatility given the tweeting of news or geopolitical news, but we still have buying on positive news and selling on the negative news, it seems.
Yeah, so, I mean, the markets today, and the JSE, which has had a spectacular week, came off quite sharply, 1.5% by the close, but it has had a remarkable week, considering that this time last week we still hadn't won a World Cup. We still had we were still on a neutral outlook on our credit rating. We won the World Cup, got our outlook downgraded and got warned that we got to get our act together in 3 months, and what we had this week was a strengthening currency and an improving stock market. It was weird.
Well, indeed, I guess it shows what a World Cup victory can do, even for the markets. But it seems that some people had priced in a downgrade from Moody's last week. And obviously, when we only were moved to negative outlook, there was a bit of a bounce on the back of that.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it feels more and more like an inevitability, particularly as the Eskom grid shrinks and shrivels and shakes in anticipation of potential breakdowns. I mean, that is, of course, our Achilles heel, our kryptonite, whatever cliche you would like to use.
Mm-hmm, indeed. We can only hope that the political capital is found to resolve the situation. But when you get to the stage where interest payments become one of the largest expense items in the budget, then you know you're on a downward spiral to significant issues.
We don't want those significant issues, but lots of companies have got significant issues. We know Tiger Brands has been in all kinds of trouble over the last 2 years or so. And what they've announced today, which led to a big jump up in their share price, was their plans to sell their VAMP business, their value-added meat products business. Far sexier way of saying VAMP than saying Polonian bacon.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it seems that the Tiger Brands is long... I suppose you could say ill-fated journey onto the continent seems to be shrinking by the day. Obviously, Deli Foods also announced today that it will be shut down. The business has barely been profitable since they purchased it around 8 years ago. And as you mentioned, the meat business as well, not part of the core grains business, according to new management. It's far more cyclical, lower margins. And obviously, with the listeriosis crisis, you have to impair the brand equity in that business. So, I mean, the two businesses combined, only about 2% of Tiger's revenue, but their combined losses which they made were about 15% of earnings for the group. So it is, from a capital allocation perspective, the right decision, and obviously that led to the positive move today.
Yeah, it was one of very few positive moves ahead of results next week. We got MultiChoice and a nice bump. But Richemont came out with a set of results that I can only assume it's the Hong Kong protests. Hong Kong, of course, such a critical market for luxury goods, and it's been in turmoil for months and months and months now. And Richemont share price down 5% on the day following those results.
Yes, Hong Kong was a large part of that. I mean, from a top-line perspective, more than 10% of Richemont sales come from Hong Kong. Obviously, a lot of mainland consumers prefer to purchase their jewelry and watches in Hong Kong as opposed to the mainland due to taxes on jewelry on the mainland. So when you have the protests in Hong Kong, obviously that discourages people going over there for luxury tourism, as well as in Europe as well, the weaker Chinese yuan having an impact there. But we hope that it is somewhat more cyclical and not a long-term structural impact for Richemont. Obviously, the online division as well, UX Net-a-Porter, is where a lot of the losses in the group come from, and that has a significant impact on earnings as well.
Yeah, I mean, the luxury goods space is really interesting at the moment. I know markets are under pressure, but with the likes of LVMH trying to buy Tiffany's and, mm-hmm. you know, there seem to be quite a few big sort of global consolidation drives at the moment. Richemont is, you know, with its South African roots, always very close to our hearts, I suspect.
Yes, I remember last time we did speak about Buccellati, which Richemont had purchased, and they've made a few of these smaller bolt-on acquisitions, Net-a-Porter aside. But Tiffany's is one of the larger jewels in the global hard luxury crown. And for LVMH, which is very strong in soft luxury, obviously, with the brands they have, this is a move which kind of directly challenges Richemont to an extent, but I doubt that Mr. Rupert wants to get into a bidding war for luxury.
No.
For Tiffany's. LVMH does have a stronger balance sheet, so that might not work. But it will be interesting to see what happens.
Aspen's looking like it's gearing up to sell something new. It sold its infant milk formula business a couple of months ago, came out with another cautionary announcement today, and that's usually the first sign that they're in talks to sell something.
Indeed. And they did mention it would be in the Asia-Pacific region. And this is part of their restructuring story, which they are undertaking at the moment. I mean, we all know that historically they grew via acquisitions, but that obviously led to the balance sheet becoming strained. And once you can no longer provide that acquisitive growth, the multiple does contract from a peak of over 30 times to less than 10 times today. But however, if they do manage to pull off a significant disposal and reduce debt on the balance sheet. Currently, their net debt to EBITDA, I think, is about 3.5 times. It does start to give legs to the restructuring story that the balance sheet is going to be repaired, and then perhaps you start seeing some organic growth from what's left over in the business.
Was there anything new in the Steinhoff update today? They come up with these regular updates, and it's, you know, to my mind, nothing particularly new, but the market didn't like what it saw. And that is, you know, they are worried about being sued, and they are, you know, pursuing legal actions, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, two things which they did mention there. The first, which I suppose everyone knows, is that they're considering a partial listing of Pepkor. Obviously, that would raise much-needed capital for the business. Pepkor still remains a highly cash-generative business. And that would go to paying down some of the debt that Steinhoff does have. As far as the litigation is concerned, now, there was a small little line in there which said we may consider a rights issue to raise capital to settle some of these legal claims outside of the court process. Now, I'm not sure how investors would feel about their cash being used to settle legal claims for Steinhoff, so that may have something to do with the reaction.
I get that one, absolutely. And then we also saw Sepaku Cement. We don't often talk about Sepaku Cement, but they've they're losing money, and their sales are under pressure. And I guess this is an SA economy story. You know, we see companies like Build It with Inspire, and you see Cash Build coming under pressure. All of these sort of DIY brands taking strain. It's hardly surprising that the guys that provide the cement that sticks everything together are taking strain too.
Indeed. We've seen a number of SA Inc. Companies, so to speak, come under significant strain. And I suppose when the SA economy catches a cold, or rather when the SA economy sniffs, a lot of these smaller cap SA Inc. companies catch a significant cold. Sepaku is no different. Headline loss per share of around 4 cents, I think, from around 12 cents earnings last year this time, and mostly from sales volumes in the underlying subsidiaries, Sepaku Cement, Dangote, and Metier. Sales volumes down around 20%, obviously because there's not much happening in the construction sector, but also pricing pressure as well, which becomes a double whammy. You have competitors obviously looking to gain market share, and it's a very tough environment for companies like Sepaku.
Thank you to Tuttle. Tuttle Mashiko is with Sundown Private Wealth this evening on The Money Show. Leslie in Table View is one of the SMSs through this evening talking about voice notes. I expressed my own aberration of voice notes earlier. She says, I hate 90% of those I receive. People tend to be lazy in composing them. And in an office environment, I'm often not able to listen to it for a few hours. Absolutely. Using it should be the exception rather than the rule. And one should talk it through to yourself before, capital letters, starting to record. And that's the problem with these things. They're so easy to use. And if you like the sound of your own voice, you're prone to extending the pain and the agony for the recipient. Thank you, Leslie, for understanding.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, bringing you relevant market insights through the Africa Financial Markets Index Report. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
I see the former New York mayor, the billionaire businessman Michael Bloomberg, is considering, and he may do it today, into the race for the U.S. presidency. He might put himself forward as a Democratic Party candidate, look for that presidential nomination. Now, he is concerned, of course, that the current field of candidates just isn't good enough to beat Donald Trump, who, despite all of his trials and tribulations and his woes and whatever the liberal constituency around the globe think of him, he remains incredibly populist and could very well take a 2020 election. And there's something like 17 Democratic candidates vying to take on Donald Trump at the U.S. elections next year. They usually happen, what, October, November? I think so. The former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden is in the running. Elizabeth Warren has built up a name for herself. And, of course, Bernie Sanders, who went up against Hillary Clinton for the presidency, and then Hillary went against Donald Trump, and Donald Trump took the day. Michael Bloomberg would be a really interesting opposition to Donald Trump. Two high-powered business figures going head-to-head with completely different moral compasses. Interesting idea. On your next Money Show, Ivor Price. He's the author of a brand new book, For the Love of the Land, a critical new book in our business book feature. Also, the chief executives of MultiChoice and Vodacom with their results. We'll play Stock Pick Monday with Nadia Tokan from 27Four Investment Managers. And of course, there is our absolute favorite, and that is Make Money Mondays. That's all coming up next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702 for the curious.
Time for the best bits of The Money Show, and you can get the whole of The Money Show on our podcast each and every single day. Of course, you can download and listen to that. And part of the rationale of the best bits is, in case you've missed something and you want to catch up on it, or you want to share it with your friends, it's a very popular weekend activity, please do so. You can go onto our website, you can go to your favorite podcast app and just search for The Money Show. Now, it was an interesting sort of and confusing time on Monday evening. There was a clear majority of shareholders at ShopRite who voted against the reappointment of the founder, well, not founder, but the guy who built and is now chairing ShopRite, Christo Wiese's reappointment as a director of the company. And it caused quite a few misunderstandings amongst shareholders, because there was a SENS announcement in which it did disclose that 61% of shareholders had voted against his appointment. And some people thought that Christo Wiese had been ousted. Certainly it looked like it. So we were furiously trying to get hold of Christo Wiese. In the meantime, just before we got hold of Christo, we asked Chris Gilmore, the independent analyst, to make some sense of it.
You've taken me a bit by surprise. I didn't see that. I saw the trading update earlier, but this has kind of taken me by surprise, because Christo Wiese and Whitey Besson, you know, were almost joined at the hip. And whilst not actually related as such, they might as well have been, because they were so close. And in terms of the founding of ShopRite, you know, what, 30-odd years ago, maybe more than that, I mean, they were intimately involved in that. So for Christo Wiese to be, how can I put it delicately, ignominiously booted off the board. Yeah, I mean, that is weird.
That's what it looks like, although he's on the line to us now, Chris Gilmore. You might want to listen to this. Christo Wiese, good evening. Welcome to The Money Show. It looks from the AGM statement that you've been voted off the board. You're telling us you're still on. Please explain.
No, but I mean, how on earth do you read the SENS announcement? I mean, if memory serves, I'm not quite sure, but the votes in favor of my re-election were something like 70 or 80%. I don't remember the number anymore, but you should be able to read it on the SENS announcement.
It's a very complicated sense announcement, Christo, and that's why I'm glad that we've managed to get hold of you just to clarify. So my reading, and an analyst who tipped me off on this, suggests that you're off, but you are still on the board of ShopRite. Confirm?
Very much so, and re-elected as chairman, so there's no sensational story to make, Bruce.
It turned out it was quite a sensational story, though, because I was reading the Sen's announcement clearly, and 61% of ordinary shareholders had voted against his reappointment. But Christo Wiese has got some special shares, high voting shares, and he used those shares to put himself back on the board. And then, of course, there was the other extraordinary announcement, and that was 2 days later. The company announced its lead independent director, Shirley Zinn, had resigned. Now, I can only assume it's in protest. It's the way that Christo Wiese has acted in this particular matter, going against the will of ordinary shareholders. He's perfectly within his legal rights to do so. And we got hold of Shirley Zinn, and she said, look, I'm not going to comment on this, but she has resigned, and she only joined the board in October last year. So, yeah, I think there's going to be some interesting fun and games around ShopRite. Busi Mavuso, we spoke about her earlier on in our market. We're now talking to Chris Yelland about the role that she's playing as Chief Executive of Business Leadership South Africa, also a non-executive director at Eskom, and she's very outspoken on the issue of load shedding and what is required to fix the failing grid. She's had a fascinating career path as head of the business lobby group. She's also incredibly vocal about government's relationship with the business fraternity.
You know, for me, it baffles me because I would think that if you find yourself in that situation, you know, as a person, as a country, as a business, your natural reaction would be, what is it that I'm going to do to save myself? So the reason why we are not in that mode, I don't get it. It actually baffles me. But I think for me, I think it is as a result of, I'd like to say, indecisiveness, Bruce. Indecisiveness, because the strategy that we seem to have adopted is to say that we actually have to get everyone on the bandwagon. But I don't think we have that latitude. But I think so. I think we've also realized that because of this political turbulence, because of this infighting within the ANC, because of an ANC which is at war with itself, which is currently self-mutilating, trying to get everyone to get along on the same page with you is not going to happen. So therefore, you know, the alternative should be that I'm going to have to make the decisions that I know I'm going to have to make. Because you see, this has long past being about the ANC or the government. It is about 59 million South Africans. You know, at some point, you're going to have to realize that there are issues that are bigger than self and political interest. And those are issues of national interest. And I think we're therefore going to have to engage with this from that perspective.
Is this government the government to do it?
I believe CR is, you know, the man to do it. You know, I still believe in his leadership. I still believe that is the right man for the job. And in the main, I believe in his administration. Do I believe in the ANC? No.
That podcast of Busi Mavuso, can I recommend very strongly that you go and listen to it. Viv Govender. Now, Viv Govender is a dark horse. He is a fast-talking market commentator. He's a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss, one of our regular commentators. And he surprised us with a little bit of information on the day that the Beast announced that he was retiring from international rugby. Viv, when he was a youngster, taught an even younger Beast.
So this makes me feel very old, because now he's retired and one of my students has now retired. So can you imagine how old that makes me feel?
What was the context of your teaching him?
The Sharks used to run an academy for people that were basically quite young after high school. But, you know, you can't play rugby part-time. You have to be a pretty full-time player when you're like 18 or 19. And so they ran an academy and they had three streams. It was a BCom, a diploma, and a coaching course for the guys that weren't academically gifted. Beast, of course, was in the BCom. He was quite a smart student and one of my best students, by the way. And I think I taught him for either 1.5 or 2 years for second and third year economics.
You see, Viv Govender, what a useful guy he is. Former Springbok captain Jean de Villiers was this week's Make Money Monday special edition guest, and he was floating. I mean, the former captain who retired as a result of injury, and he was on cloud nine from seeing the Springboks win the Rugby World Cup. And he told us about his upbringing, his passion for rugby, and I asked him about his bad money mistakes, as I always do.
My real learning phase came when I got close to retirement from rugby, because you get used to a certain lifestyle and then you realize, okay, well, in a couple of months' time, that's going to end. And, you know, the check at the end of the month is certainly not the same anymore. So it's being able to adapt your lifestyle, and, you know, then you need to be comfortable in that. So I think it's when people just continue with their lifestyle and the money decreases, you know, it's quite a simple, recipe for disaster.
I mean, Brian Abanner seems to have his head screwed on. He sat in that chair previously as well. And just the planning that goes into it. And just often how sports people, it may be different now, but haven't had the support they've needed through their careers. You start out as this hugely powerful and influential 18-year-old. You're bulletproof and you're broken by the time you're 30, maybe a little older. And you don't get the guidance. So you're finding that there is a greater level of responsibility, club level, and then as you get into more professional sport, that there is that support?
Yeah, it is so important. And luckily, I was fortunate that I had my parents that really helped me. But a lot of people do not have that kind of advisors. And I think, you know, no one knows everything and you don't know what you don't know. So it's being able to really get people involved that knows what they're doing, reputable people that can help you. There's also a lot of people trying to take chances in that industry, and you need to be aware of that, because
you guys some guys have got screwed over time.
No, but so many, and I mean, I've burnt my fingers a couple of times as well. And I suppose the one thing that won't ever change is the fact that, you know, you're going to deal with early 20, mid 20 year olds, you know, and you think, you know, everything. You go buy the nicest car and you're the first guy that tells you they're going to give you a 30% ROI on your investment. You take that and suddenly you end up with nothing.
Yeah.
So, it's being able to do a bit of, research and surround yourself with good people. That's probably the best advice I can give.
That is good advice, Jean de Villiers. Thank you. Jean de Villiers, the former Springbok captain, wrapping up this evening's best bits from the week that has been. You can find our podcasts on our website or just go to your favorite podcast provider and look for The Money Show. Coming up in a moment, your favorite part of the week, it's certainly mine, where we play the Brutal Biz Quiz. I ask you a question, you then endeavor to answer it and a bunch of others, and I will declare who the whiz of the biz quiz is for this week. What is affectionately known as Bill? What is affectionately known as Bill? I didn't know this until today. Bill is making his presence felt all over the country right now. So what is Bill? 011-883-0702-021-446-0567 on The Money Show.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is proudly brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, bringing you relevant market insights through the Africa Financial Markets Index Report. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. The Money Show. The Brutal Biz Quiz.
What is affectionately known as Bill? Let us try Werner first. Hello, Werner.
G'day. It's the Webb Ellis Trophy, the World Cup Trophy.
What Webb Ellis Trophy?
It's the World Cup Trophy, the Rugby World Cup Trophy.
Yeah, but what's its full name?
The William Webb Ellis.
William Webb Ellis. And Bill is short for?
Bill.
Bill is short William for William, short, absolutely.
William is Bill.
William is Bill. Bill Clinton is William Clinton, absolutely right. SA Rugby insured the Webb Ellis Cup. R570,000 for the Champions Tour. The cup, the base is made of sterling silver, gilded in gold, and weighs 4.5 kilograms, which is why Sia can hold it above his head for so long. Which retiring Springbok studied for a BCom degree?
It's the Beast.
The Beast, absolutely right. He completed his long-distance BCom in marketing through UNISA. And, of course, our market commentator, Viv Govender, taught him at some point. Which beer sponsorship allowed the SABC, finally, to broadcast the Rugby World Cup final between South Africa and England?
Heineken.
It is Heineken, absolutely right. Werner, Werner's on rugby fire this evening. And then which Japanese sport shoe brand is featured on the Springbok World Cup jersey?
Japanese shoe.
3, 2, 1.
No, I don't know.
Oh, well, Werner. What about you, Tabo? The Japanese shoe brand featured on the jersey?
It's the Canterbury of New Zealand.
Canterbury's not a shoemaker, Tabo, and Canterbury is New Zealand, and they make the jerseys, the lovely jerseys, but it's not the shoe brand. Amelia?
Oh, is it Toyota?
Toyota? I have never worn a pair of Toyotas myself. No, it's not Toyota. Which shoe brand? And it's amazing. You've looked at that rugby jersey so often, and it's amazing what you do and don't see. Mosley.
I do. Asics.
Asics, absolutely right. Everyone's kicking themselves like, of course, it's the little A thing. Absolutely right. It's Asics. In which Japanese city used to be known as Koromo?
Koromo.
It's a city where everything just keeps going right.
Yokohama.
Not Yokohama, no. Oh, mostly you're going to kick yourself on this one. It's a city where everything keeps on going right. It's a city that used to be known as Koromo. We know what comes from there in South Africa very well. Very well. And everything keeps on going right. Rushdie?
Is it Yokohama?
It's not Yokohama, no. Amin?
It's Kyoto.
Pardon? Kyoto. No, it's not Kyoto.
Kyoto.
I think when we get through all Japanese cities, we got to go through all Japanese cities. There's Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It's not those. It's not those. Llewellyn, the Japanese city that was known as Koromo.
Toyota.
Toyota. Absolutely right. Everything keeps going right. Toyota. You remember the payoff line. And yes, South Africa played Namibia in Toyota. And that's why South Africa won, because we've got more Toyotas. Which Springbok rugby player should have insured his cheekbone?
Andre Pollard.
He should have. He should have, absolutely. Llewellyn, you are the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening, a World Cup-themed Brutal Biz Quiz. Andre Pollard, in 2015, it was reported that Bidvest Insurance had insured Pollard's kicking foot for 2 million rand. He missed the team's trophy tour after suffering a broken cheekbone. I wonder how much it will cost to insure every bit of you just in case something breaks. But these guys are tough. And so Andre Pollard is missing the tour. Hopefully he can join up at some point.